Now entering Nerdist.com.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. Holy cow. This is a fun episode. This is a funny episode. Some fun facts about random trivia and city facts and facts about Marvel Comics and things like that. But also some fun, interesting trivia in the minds of a writer and writers in general and a pair of writers here. One of the guests is a returning guest. You may recognize him from a previous episode about a year ago, maybe a little over a year ago. But the other guest is brand new, and he's great. He's very funny and very smart. They're the writers of Zombieland, G.I. Joe Retaliation, and ladies and gentlemen, the upcoming Deadpool. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm super excited for the Deadpool movie. Huge fan of Ryan Reynolds, huge fan of these writers and the movies that they've done. And this is just a really fun episode. I'm glad Rhett stopped back here. You know, he's a fun friend of mine. Always, these guys were great to talk to, and I'd love to have them back just because they're picking their brain and chatting shop with them was very entertaining and exciting to me. So without further ado, today we learned number 121 with Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick.
Gentlemen, let's broaden our minds.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Today We Learned. This is I'm excited for this show. I'm excited for every show. First off, I say that every time. Sometimes it's somewhat insincere. Sometimes it's very sincere. This is very sincere. We have a returning guest, a very fun acquaintance of mine. I'm going to say acquaintance, but hopefully after today it'll be friend.
I think it's friend.
I think it's friends now. I like it. I will accept that. Returning and a new guest today. Ladies and gentlemen, first off, I'm excited because there's a movie coming out this weekend that I'm excited about, only because last time he was on, it was almost just like an afterthought, and like there was if there was a hope meter, it would have been very low.
That's true. That's sad but true.
And then literally
listen to that podcast.
If you go back and listen to that podcast, you'll hear, and it's like, oh, the script's online, blah, 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 whatever. And then literally like 2 months after or 3 months after,
something like that,
somebody somehow leaked this.
No, I did not do it.
Somebody leaked this footage that everybody knows about for the Deadpool movie, and it exploded on the internet, and now there's a movie coming out, and it looks phenomenal. Ladies and gentlemen, writers of Zombieland, G.I. Joe Retaliation, creators, if I recall, of the Joe Schmo Show, and the writers of Deadpool coming out this weekend. Ladies and gentlemen, Rhett Reese and Paul Wernick.
Thank you so much for having us.
Yes, thank you.
And you mentioned that leak. It's sort of like a game of Clue, because there are about seven suspects, you know, who had a motive to commit the crime. And it's like, was it Colonel Mustard in the dining
There's
room
really
with the candlestick?
Or
it's really probably five maybe.
Yeah.
Yeah,
not even
seven. And one of us did it, and yet none of us has admitted it. It's an interesting. I didn't do it.
So who was it?
I didn't do it. Maybe Razzle did it.
I didn't do it.
Maybe I had you do it. You
I didn't
were my
do
proxy.
It. You know what? That's hey,
that would
I will
be pretty genius.
If anybody has anything that needs to be leaked, I can be a proxy. I'm just going to throw that out there.
We had emails back and forth talking about how to indeed leak the test.
Yeah, there's a bad paper trail.
Very bad.
Is this a real thing? Like
yes.
You're yeah. Well,
between,
it worked.
Between myself, Rhett, Ryan and Tim,
yeah.
Tim, our director, and obviously Ryan Reynolds. And we were just not technologically savvy enough to figure out how to do it, or at least that's our story.
It's a story that works so far.
So far, so good.
Yeah, unless there's any nerds out there that can track IP numbers.
I know, that's the problem.
Wait, what's an IP? IP they can track?
I don't know.
How does that work?
You're going to learn that today. It's called Today We Learn.
So. Well, to be honest, too, I wonder if – I mean, there's so many mirrors of it. I got to imagine it'd be too hard to find the original source, right?
Let's hope so.
Because wasn't the original source it leaked, and then didn't they end up putting the real one online shortly after?
Yeah, I think. But I think even that was hacked. At least we were told it was. Though that may have been a defensive play, because the first one was such low quality that somebody might have been, well, if it's out there, we might as well put out a high quality one. But I think the official story is that was also hacked and leaked, but who knows?
Who knows about hacking things? I love it. I just want to sit here and get the other two on the lines, and we'll play a game. You ever play Mafia?
Yeah.
You ever play a game of Mafia?
Yeah.
And just play a game of Mafia.
Right, exactly. You'll be like our interrogator. And
yeah. Oh, that's
Is
so
it
funny.
Hot in here? I'm starting to feel hot.
Yeah, I know, exactly.
Sweat.
You're getting some flop sweat.
I really am.
Rhett, you mentioned you have a fun fact that you learned recently.
I do. I'm reading a book called Dataclysm, which is written by one of the technological guys at OkCupid. And the fun fact is that when someone takes your picture, if they use a flashbulb, you tend to look, on average, 7 years older in that picture than the same picture taken without a flashbulb.
Really?
Flashbulbs make us look old, apparently. I think it's just that harsh fluorescent lighting, you know, that lights up your face and accentuates your crow's feet or something. But anyway, I thought that was interesting.
That's very interesting.
Or maybe not. I don't know.
No, that is because
it's a real conversation.
Because there's definitely there's definitely some photos where I'll use the flash and like you'll see more of my wrinkles or whatever. But then like I'll go in a photo booth where it's like a complete washout, and then I look 10 years younger because it completely
gets
overexposed.
So maybe it depends
extra
on the flash.
Yeah, maybe extra flash.
Yeah. That's great. No, so it was a book, Dataclysm.
Yeah, it's called Dataclysm. It's really fascinating.
That's
because
great.
OkCupid and these big websites have all this data at their
disposal.
Thank you. That's the word, disposal. And anyway, they can analyze it any which way, up, down, left, right, and discover all these interesting things about people. Anyway, that was one of them.
That's great. Now, you mentioned you read that book. I have a thing here about a book that is out that, according to Wikipedia, you guys got, and you're going to turn this into a movie or whatever, if I'm correct. But it also goes to something I talked about on the last podcast about New Coke.
Oh, yeah.
And the Pepsi. This is it's a thing I tell a lot of people because it's a fascination of mine, mainly because I prefer Pepsi as it is, but also it's just a fun, interesting fact as far as what marketing can do and how it can force companies to go well, to make decisions.
Right.
So just for the listeners, and maybe you guys know more because I haven't read the book, but maybe there's more to it than just what I've learned. But the reason New Coke came out, or Coke 2 as it was later known as, is because of the Pepsi Taste Test Challenge.
That's correct.
And there was a blind taste test, and the outcome of it tended to be more people preferred drinking Pepsi
that
over
is
Coke.
Correct.
So then Coke circumvented that with changing their recipe to resemble that more of Pepsi.
Yes.
And their sales declined very drastic.
It was a disaster.
So then they swapped it back and they changed
added
that to Coke 2 and added Classic, which is current, and it just made everything go through the roof.
Yeah, they ended up better off than when they started, but for a while there, it was a huge disaster.
It was the new guard coming in and challenging the old guard, and the old guard, you know, reacting in a way that ultimately turned from disaster to success with Classic Coke.
Yeah, I mean, and Pepsi was just beating the crap out of them at that time. I mean, in the 80s, because the Pepsi Challenge, that not only did people find Pepsi preferable when they tasted it, but they marketed that fact to the world. I mean, all these commercials about the Pepsi Challenge.
Yeah, and the choice of a new generation.
Yes, and they had hired Michael Jackson, and it was the pressure was on Coke. I mean, Pepsi was really gobbling up their market share at that time, and they decided to make this really pretty drastic. And they changed a formula that was, 100 years old at that point, or something like 90 years old. Like, anyway, they changed it. And that formula sits in a vault where you have to, like, literally, it's like a bank vault, and there's, like, stairs down. It's, like, underground.
Only three people have access to it.
Yeah, just the idea that they would have ever
opened
that vault.
They have an email chain on who should leak that, too.
Yeah, exactly.
We've leaked the actual recipe to Coca-Cola. That was something we also did.
Paul Wernick did that.
The New Coke was the unofficial popular name of the reformulation of Coca-Cola. It was introduced in the spring of 1985. Then that lasted until the new taste of Coca-Cola until 1992, when it was changed to Coke 2 and they released Classic.
This is also a lot of people don't remember it now, but at the time the spokesperson for Coke was Bill Cosby.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was the guy. He was their answer to Michael Jackson in his sweater.
His Coke tasted a little differently than everybody else's.
The two is for how many Quaaludes supposed to put in there. Coca-Cola 2, Quaaludes.
The taste of a passed out generation.
You put the thing in the Coke and then it fizzes.
Oh, dear.
Speaking of New Coke, so there's Coke Zero, Yes. And there's Diet Coke.
Now, Coke Zero by far is my favorite drink.
Okay.
Brett loves Coke Zero. Why?
Because Coke Zero is the official diet version of Coca-Cola Classic. The Diet Coke that is out, the Diet Coke that is normally Diet Coke, is the diet version of Coke.
Oh, interesting.
Of the new Coke, as they say. The Diet Coke is the...
Interesting.
Yeah. Well, I know, and I heard they were marketing Coke Zero to men because men weren't drinking enough diet soda, but boy, it really, it scored
it's
with me.
Yeah.
It's delightful.
It is.
That's, so what, you read that book and you guys decided, like, no, is that like, are you actually turning that into your working
that's
on that?
The plan.
Is that something
you're, that's the plan. In very
interestingly,
early stages.
We found the book after we had the idea.
Okay.
So we were sitting around talking about how movies always celebrate the underdog victory, and we wanted to actually do quite the opposite and look at failures, and we kind of looked through the internet and said, what are some of the big failures in modern times, and New Coke was just top on the list, and we thought, that's a phenomenal story. We started to dig a little deeper, and it's such great characters and such, again, old guard versus new guard. It was really...
Do you remember because that's a fascinating concept. Like, that always intrigues me, of when you have an idea, then you go down that rabbit hole of linking and clicking links on the internet. What were some other major failures that you maybe remember that came across?
Ford Edsel was one.
Oh, is that the one that would catch on fire?
No.
Or is that was the Pinto.
Yeah.
But that was a failure. I'm trying to remember what some of the other ones. There's a really cool book on failure that I read a long time ago. It was just fun. It was just about all these people who failed in history in spectacular, hilarious ways. But we wanted to look at American corporate culture. I mean, certainly there are a lot of examples. If you look back at, I think it's the movie Blade Runner. I could be wrong about this, but there are all these billboards in Blade Runner from the 70s for various companies, and they've all gone out of business. It's like Pan Am and Atari. So there's plenty of example of corporate failure, but New Coke was just one that really resonated for us.
The Edsel was an automobile that was planned, developed, and manufactured by the Ford Motor Company during the 1958, 59, and 60 model years. With the Edsel, Ford had expected to make significant inroads into the market share of both General Motors and Chrysler.
And it totally backfired. Yeah. That car is... And now I think it's a collector's item for the reason that it was so terrible almost. Yeah. It's gone the other way.
The word Edsel became popular symbol for commercial failure. Like they would toss around the word Edsel for failures.
I wonder if bottles of New Coke are collector's items. They must be,
I would think.
We should go on eBay and check that out. Yeah, I'm curious.
Maybe get some.
Well, like Crystal Pepsi, bottles of Crystal Pepsi, before they announced that they were going to, like, Amazon and stuff was going to start maybe trying to
redo
some of that.
It or
like
something.
You could get like 2 liters of Crystal Pepsi would be like $18
on
eBay.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Like who's keeping bottles of
Crystal Pepsi? Like, and what's if you opened it up and drank it now, what would be horrifying?
I don't even remember Crystal Pepsi.
Yeah.
What was Crystal Pepsi?
It was just, it tasted
clear?
Like Pepsi, but it was clear. Remember there was
There
was that whole clear.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then like they marketed it as maybe like being healthier because you didn't have the caramel dye.
Right.
That extra thing. And
which
it was
so ridiculous.
But it also goes to like the placebo effect that people didn't like it because they want their Pepsi to look like Pepsi.
Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
Speaking of Crystal Pepsi, I guess it's clear and it's a clear soda. Here's something about 7-Up. Here, I had this fact here for a bit, and it's actually finally worked its way into a show, into a segue. 7-Up, originally named Bib Label Lithiated Lemon Lime Soda, was launched 2 weeks before the Wall Street crash of 1929.
Goes way back.
Yeah.
I didn't realize 7-Up was that old.
It was changed to 7-Up in 1936, and it contained lithium citrate, which was a mood-stabilizing drug until 1950.
I could use some of that.
Lithium still is a mood-stabilizing drug.
That's what I'm saying.
At least an antipsychotic or something.
Yeah, they stopped incorporating lithium citrate in 1950. And then they just became normal 7-Up.
Well, and didn't Coke have cocaine in it to begin with? I mean, that
I don't think that's correct.
I shouldn't be spreading that problem.
Well, they were – because originally they were like syrups.
Check the internet.
Snopes.com.
Yeah, cocaine,
Coke,
Coca-Cola.
Cocaine. Reset Safari.
let's see here. Yes. Coca-Cola. concentrate. I'm scanning here because I feel like I've heard
like
that too.
It had like coca leaf, but I don't think it was cocaine.
Yeah, I don't think it was actual
originally
cocaine,
as a coca but. Wine. It was formulated at Pemberton's Eagle Drug and Chemical House. So it was the prototype recipe was made
at
It was a pharmacy.
But that was common, I think, because those the old soda jerks, you know, yep. like you'd go to the drugstore. That's where you got your soda. You go to the drugstore. That's where Bill Cosby got his soda.
the gentleman.
Second Bill Cosby.
John Pemberton, the inventor of Coca-Cola, claimed Coca-Cola cured many diseases, including morphine addiction, dyspepsia, headache, and impotence. Pemberton, I don't see anything about cocaine on here, though.
Dyspepsia sounds like a Pepsi product.
Didn't he sell the recipe for Coca-Cola small amount of money?
Yeah, like, to the old man who ended up, you know, carrying it forward for 70 years.
Yeah, I'm looking for a price here. Bought the title. One of several stories was that a person by the name of Chandler bought the title to the name from Charlie's mother for $300.
Oh,
there's all every one of these stories has somebody like the creator Superman. You know, it's like McDonald's. Yeah, the guys who created it ultimately got it snapped away by somebody more savvy.
Wild stuff. Now, Deadpool.
Yes.
Actually, here, let's talk about this. Because this is interesting. So, Paul, you were, according to your Wikipedia, you were born in Toronto.
I was.
Toronto is the most populous city in Canada.
Okay.
And it is also the fourth most populous city in North America after Mexico City, then New York, then
is
Los Angeles.
Right?
Whoa.
So, as far as the entire North America, Toronto is the fourth most populous city.
Interesting.
So, you're born in Toronto, but the two of you went to high school together.
Yes.
In Phoenix, Arizona.
Arizona, yeah.
How did that happen?
Well, I moved from Ohio to Arizona, and Paul moved from Toronto.
Toronto to Phoenix.
Yeah, and we met in high school. One of us gave the other one a wedgie.
Okay.
You get to guess which gave which.
Paul's a little bigger than I am. I might have been the wedgie receiver. Though I was 3 years – I'm actually – not was. Still am 3 years older than Paul. So he was a freshman when I was a senior. But that's how we met.
Okay, so you just happened to – your families both moved there when you were
younger. Yeah, just
younger.
Independent.
Was there like an industry there or whatever that took them there, or they just decided to move to Phoenix?
Mine, my dad came out. He was a physician and was getting away from socialized medicine in Canada in the 70s, late 70s or mid to late 70s and moved down to Phoenix. So
okay.
I think there was some reciprocal – if you had a Canadian medical license – Phoenix or Arizona recognized that as one of the states that recognized, and so they moved down.
And my dad was a banker. He came out and bought a little tiny one-room bank up in Prescott, Arizona. Yeah, that's what happened. But
oh, wow.
Yeah.
And then people would come in and he would just
loan
them money.
He was like that. He was
like one of those
George Bailey.
Yeah.
Yeah, like from It's a Wonderful Life.
Yeah.
Like it was literally like the one-room bank. And
okay.
People would come in and he would like hand them cash across the table. Like it was that. I mean, I'm joking, but it was pretty ma and pa.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then so were you became friends in high school or did you more – like did you start writing – how did your friendship and your partnership
write up? Well, the writing came much, much later. Yeah. We each took separate paths. I became a feature screenwriter and was writing children's movies, and Paul went into
– I was a local news producer around the country. I was in Phoenix and Tucson, Salt Lake City, and then here in Los Angeles.
Okay.
And then jumped into reality TV from my news background and got Rhett hooked on Big Brother. I was one of the producers on Big Brother, Big Brother 2 actually. And we were sitting around one night watching and we said, you know, we should come up with a reality show. And that night we came up with the Joe Schmo Show, which was a combination of Rhett's scripted background and my non-scripted background.
That's awesome.
And we were so naive to think that we could sell it that we sold it. You know, it was like if had we had the knowledge that's in our head now, we would have been defeatist and we wouldn't have even tried. But we were so ignorant and naive of how reality TV worked that we just went out and started pitching it.
Well, and it was at the cusp of really
it was when
the
reality
TV
was
boom,
taking off.
Yeah, it was like the super, Wild West. It was the Wild West.
Yeah, everybody wanted something of some form of reality. Yes.
But it had been around just long enough already that it was ripe to be made fun of, which was what we did. I mean, because the shows had been – I don't remember when Survivor came out, but it was probably like 2000, 2001, something like that. And we were in, I think, 2003. And anyway, it had been around just enough that it was ripe for parody.
Oh, yeah.
And so we made fun of it in a pretty fun
and
way.
That Joe Schmo Show Season 1 launched the career of Kristen Wiig.
Kristen Wiig.
Who everybody knows about now.
Yeah.
If you don't know about her,
she's
then get out of your barn. But
she's the
so
best.
Talented.
But yeah.
She's great.
She is terrific. And nope. we did cast her before SNL did. And that will be a badge of honor for us forever.
One of the new Ghostbusters.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
You guys found the talent of...
Yeah. And the guy who plays Dopinder, the cab driver in Deadpool, is also going to be in Ghostbusters.
Oh, that's awesome.
Sony is his name, yeah.
That's great. Dopinder, Mr. Pinder.
Mr. Pinder.
Mr. Pool.
Yeah. Mr. Pool, yeah.
Yes.
That was a funny trailer part. That made me laugh.
Dopinder, named after a classmate of Ryan Reynolds.
Who died at a very young age.
Dopinder Virk.
Dopinder Virk. Wow. And Ryan named the character after him, just in honor of him. And here he is.
Because he likes the sound of the name, too.
It's a great name.
Dopinder. Yeah. Are there any other names of – do you guys do that a lot? Naming characters off of like previous friends or people you know?
I think names are important. If it's a throwaway, we'll do a little nod to a friend or someone from high school or a family member or something. But if it's a real important character, we tend to obsess over the names to try to get them just right. Obviously, Deadpool, most of the characters were just handed to us because they pre-existed. But
who we created Dopinder. Who else? Is there anybody else? I'm trying to think who else would
we created. I don't know.
Or what about Zombieland? Because that was your creation, right?
Well, yeah. And that was to us. It was the city names because they didn't go – they didn't – divulge to each other their actual names, so they use the names of the cities they were
true.
From.
In the first draft,
it was Flagstaff and Albuquerque. It's like Albuquerque, Tallahassee was Albuquerque, and Columbus was Flagstaff. But then when we went to shoot the movie, it was set in Arizona, basically, in the desert, and we had to shoot in Atlanta, so we had to change all the geographies. Everybody came from a different place.
Although Little Rock, I think, was consistently Little Rock.
No, Stillwater.
Stillwater. And who was Wichita?
Wichita was the one that was consistent.
Wichita.
Yeah, it was always Wichita.
That's a great movie.
Stillwater became Little Rock, and this is bizarre trivia, and no one will probably...
I'm trying to think if there's anyone else in Deadpool...
Who we created... I don't think so. I think everybody else.
Yeah,
everybody else is in the comics.
Oh, the in the pizza scene we created.
No, the pizza scene was from the comics too. Remember?
Yeah.
That's great. Spoiler alert: if you don't know about the pizza scene, there's a pizza scene.
Yeah, there's a pizza scene.
Interestingly, the pizza scene
is the only scene that we really took, you know, reasonably directly from the comics. Like it was a really fun scene. I'm trying to remember. It might have been Joe Kelly. I can't remember the writer. That's embarrassing me. But we didn't use every line necessarily, but the scene plays out very similarly on screen as it did in the comics.
Now, were you approached – because this is to write a script like Deadpool and have it be limbo, sit in limbo for a long time, almost, what, 6 years now, 7 years, quite a bit?
Yeah, 6.5 years now.
And have it set in such limbo, and then you have to, you know, obviously the chain of events to get it made now. Was it one of those things where you guys wrote it like on spec, or did you get approached to write the script? Were they planning on making it at first, and then they hired you guys to write it, or you guys were just fans of Deadpool?
We got hired soon after Wolverine Origins came out. They had the character, while not done exactly as comic fans had wanted, yes, but was very popular in the sense that this was the guy fast talking, the merc with the mouth, and so Fox wanted to spin him off into his own character, and so we auditioned for the job amongst probably a bunch of other writers around town. We connected with Ryan. He was very involved very early on in the process. I think he's been on the project for 11 plus years now.
I think they
approached him when New Line had the rights to the comic back in, 2002, 2003.
Oh, wow.
He was really the keeper of the world, and so we originally pitched him, and we pitched him a story in the present day, not an origin story, because we had felt like the oversaturation of the superhero market, origin stories, people have seen them, it's been done, how do we do it and not be depressing with cancer and so forth, but Ryan really insisted that that's really the pathos of the character. That's the heartbeat of the character, is to get into how he became who he became. And so we merged our present day story with Ryan's desire to establish an origin for Deadpool, and that was really the genesis of the project.
You auditioned to write the script. How what is that process like? Because I understand the idea of, and I've heard stories from director friends of mine where you get a vision or whatever. So for directing, you get an idea and you go in and you're like, I would do this or whatever. Then like, or auditioning for like roles and things like that. I've done that, but auditioning for writing, like what's writing auditioning?
Well, the tough part is you have to break the whole story. You have to figure it all out for free and with no guarantee that you're going to get the job. And so you spend, upwards of a month maybe sometimes creating a pitch. You know, you break every scene. You figure it out. You outline it. You write up a pitch or you cobble together a pitch, and then you go in and you verbally pitch it. And oftentimes you're up against 6, 7, 8 other writers doing the same thing. It's called a derby or a horse race, they tend to call it. And it's terrible because, you know, you got 8 teams doing a ton of work and only one of them ends up getting a cent for it and getting the job. And so, and we've been on both ends of it. We've gotten the job and oftentimes we've failed to get the job. And it's just, it's probably one of our least favorite things. And yet it anymore where there's pre-branded IP, you know, intellectual property, anymore it's the studios who come to the writers instead of the other way around. And so, and they open it up and it's in their best interest to hear a bunch of different takes and get a bunch of different opinions about what it might look like. And so, I don't know, it's to our great disadvantage, but it's kind of the way it is.
That's interesting. Like that's as you know, as we were talking about earlier, as a writer trying to get into it and who's having trouble writing, that's that's informative. That's interesting. Like that.
An actor auditioning for a part. It you know it takes a couple days. It's tough. You know, you got to learn the lines.
Read your sides or whatever.
But then it's over and done
to
with.
Break.
Now I say that, but then oftentimes for actors there are callbacks, and then there are, you know, network tests, and sometimes you go in 4 or 5 times. So in some ways it's
to work on something for a month and have it be your baby and incubate it, and then you have no recourse
because it's based on their material, not yours, so you can't really go take it somewhere else and sell it. It's a tough
Have you ever have you ever broken a story for something and you didn't get it, but you found scenes or maybe story structure or whatever in your pitches that you ended up putting in other things?
A lot of times.
Yeah, I mean we
dirty little secret. Yeah, but yeah we
sold a movie based on a pitch that we went in for
and didn't get.
And then
we wrote it on spec. Because it wasn't so unique. What we came up with wasn't unique to the brand that we were pitching for. We probably shouldn't mention what it was. But in any case, just because not really fair to them. But in any case, we came out of the pitch, we didn't get the gig, and we just thought, you know,
this is a great movie.
Yeah, and it's very different from their brand. You know, it's like it stands on its own. And so we ended up selling it. Like we wrote it on our own and then we sold it. But that's rare. I mean, it's rare that it happens in that.
So you wrote the same
pretty much the
film, you know, or not, you changed it around?
Yeah, not exactly, but I'd say, you know, 3/4-ish. The same, like as from what we pitched, and more often it's what you said, which is it's just a scene or a character or some glimpse of an action scene or something, and then we'll use that later.
But we shouldn't feel like we've done anything wrong it was an original idea based on, you know,
it was far enough afield from the original concept that brought us in that it didn't matter.
Yeah. Because that's always interesting. Like I mentioned it on last week's episode, where when it comes to like writing or writers, like I have the a printed out version of the conversation that George Lucas, Steven Spielberg, and I think Kazan had when they were breaking Indiana Jones. And it's thick. And there's a lot of stuff in there that didn't make any of the movies, but there's a lot of things in there that they're talking about for, you know, they're breaking the story for Raiders. And there's scenes in there like the tunnel chase and all that from Temple that ended up getting carried over into subsequent movies because they couldn't fit it into that.
Absolutely.
So talking to writers when it comes to like breaking stories or writing scripts, so then you got to cut scenes out to make it fit 90 pages or whatever. It's always
a great idea is a great idea. And oftentimes, you know, even though it doesn't fit in a particular story or doesn't make it in, it remains a great idea.
That's great. Now, Deadpool is a Marvel property. correct?
It's owned by Fox. But it's a Marvel property.
It's a Marvel property. In the comics, it's a Marvel property.
That's correct.
The rights, the film is coming out with Fox.
Right.
Correct.
The comic book is part of Marvel Comics. And I didn't know this, but Marvel Comics had quite the quite the name change. Marvel started in 1939 as a pulp publication called Timely Publications, and by the 1950s, it had generally become known as Atlas Comics. The modern incarnation of Marvel occurred in 1961, which happened to be the same year that they launched Fantastic Four, as well as they launched Fantastic Four with other properties such from Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, including the first appearance of the Human Torch and Namor the Submariner, who's like a
that's gonna be a tough one to make a movie.
He's
got the little wings on the
and he's just, like, well, and that's what kind of like I with DC trying to play catch up with like what Marvel's doing and even what like Fox is kind of or tried to do like Fantastic Four and things like that. It with the competition, it puzzles me how like Marvel with their huge roster of these great works, how they didn't try and beat DC out. Like DC announced an Aquaman movie, and I feel like Namor to me would be a better character because he's like that anti-hero, you know, almost kind of like Deadpool, where he's like he's a hero but he's still kind of like an anti-hero. I feel like that would be a better movie than like an
possibly.
Aquaman.
But I do worry. I mean, the ocean thing's going to be a tough one. I don't.
Yeah,
it's like there's a little bit of an absurdity to Aquaman talking to the whales that you know it's going to be interesting to see how they make it work, but.
Yeah, unless you did it more like the abyss of some form where like he's battling he's more battling like these human.
Some are tougher to crack than others. I think those are particularly tough, probably just because of the ocean element. It adds budget. It's a little.
Now you guys have transformed quite a few properties into like you worked on G.I. Joe,
mm-hmm.
And as now you have Deadpool.
Yeah,
and I was reading. You did a Cowboy Ninja Viking, or you're working on that. That's based off of a comic book too, correct?
Correct.
Or am I now? What's it? How? What's your? And as we were talking to, and this will get into the writing process of your writing process because I'm as a solo writer, I have trouble sitting down and writing and breaking everything like that. And I've talked to different types of writing teams, and sometimes they'll write together, sometimes they'll write separate, and so forth. So I'm interested to hear how you guys do that on top of when someone comes to you or when you go to someone saying, we want to do this property, such as like Cowboy Ninja Viking or Deadpool or G.I. Joe, how do you go about breaking that? Especially perhaps maybe with like G.I. Joe, there's already a film version. Like you're not necessarily breaking the comic book, that version. Now you got to break
a sequel type of
thing.
Well, I mean, where there's existing material, you do your research first and you look at what's there, and then you start playing around with what's there. It's kind of like the toys are there, and you're in the sandbox, and you're now creating your own little story with the toys. In G.I. Joe, quite literally, the toys. But and then, you know, Paul and I break the stories together. We sit in a room. We put out a cork board with some index cards, and we slowly try to figure out what each scene of the movie is. And it's literally scene by scene. And then obviously we pitch it. So we cobble together a pitch and we pitch it. And then when it's time to write is when we split up.
We basically divvy up the scenes and then write, you know, the scenes that were assigned and then trade them back and forth and rewrite each other until it melds into really one voice.
Yeah. And it's pretty simple. We just use Final Draft software. And when we make a change to the other person's material, we bold it. So when the other person receives the file back, you see the bold text, and that lets you know where the changes are. And then the rough rule is that if you don't like what was bolded, you know, you can change it to a third thing, but you try not to go back to what you had before.
It's now, happened.
We do go back.
This is a better idea.
Yeah, we just keep putting it in back and forth, but
Audi 5000.
Yeah, Audi 5000. And that 5, made the movie.
In the movie.
Yeah, we had a huge debate over the years. Deadpool says in Deadpool, he's hurt, and he goes, Audi 5000. Now, That was a Paul joke.
That Red pulled out probably four or five times. Yeah.
Like, and
you didn't like the joke
won the
or
battle. I just thought, I don't know. I'm like, for the five people who get it, it's going to be great. But it felt a little obscure to me. We always have this argument.
The car, right?
The Ilyati 5000. But we have a version of this argument pretty much. We did every day on Deadpool. Not just you and I, but you and I, the producers and the director and Ryan. It's like, because Deadpool makes all kinds of references, and it's fun that he makes some obscure ones. It's good that you don't know every reference, right? And yet you don't want to overburden the audience and make them scratch their heads all the time. So there's this fine line between what is too obscure, what's not too obscure. And I thought that – I still think that one's maybe a touch too obscure, but
I love
it's in the movie.
That's
by God.
That's
Paul
funny.
Strong-armed it in.
That's so funny. We do have a rule, and the rule is whoever cares most wins. When we have a disagreement, whoever's more passionate about their –
He loved Audi 5000 more than I hated it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. We'll see what the fans think.
And how did Ryan and Tim, did they have a judge or was just like,
well, I mean,
early
every
on in
time,
the process, it was just Rhett and myself. And Ryan was very looped in early on in the process. We were sending him pages as we were writing the script. So,
but every reference, I mean, on the set, in the edit bay, like every reference we do, it's like there's a moment in the trailer where he says, you know, talks about less angry Rosie O'Donnell. Well, we had, you know, I don't know, 15, 16 different alts for that line. And then it became this, which one's going to land? You know, we used Jose Canseco. We used Kevin Sorbo. He calls her all these different names. And each one was funny to us. But then it came down to really deciding, will Jose Canseco play overseas? Like, you literally think, like, do they even know who he is? Like, less angry Rosie O'Donnell. That was in the trailer. So are people sick of it now? Would they prefer to hear something new? Or would they prefer to hear the joke they already heard? Like, these are conversations that go on ad nauseum.
We had a long debate. Rhett and I try to get David Faustino, David Faustino reference in the movie. And everyone was like, David Faustino, no one knows who David Faustino is anymore. And we're like, people, first of all, do know who David Faustino is. Second of all, it's funny.
You try to balance your references. So you got some references for the 40-year-olds, some for the 30s, some for the teens. Like you're trying to do that.
Ronnie Millsap.
Game. Yeah, we have a Ronnie Millsap reference. And you know, you probably don't know who Ronnie Millsap is, but
I don't, but I'm going to look him up right now.
Yeah, anyway, Ronnie Millsap's in there. And that made the movie. And then we also have, you know, do we have a Harry Styles reference in there?
Ronnie Millsap.
Sure we do, actually.
Ronnie Millsap is an American country singer and pianist.
He's blind, right?
He's blind.
Yep.
Smoky Mountain Rain, Any Day Now, Stranger in My House.
Yeah, I mean, so we figure if we can get away with Ronnie Millsap, we can get away with anything. But you don't
except
want
David
too
Faustino.
Many of them. Yeah, apparently we couldn't get away with David Faustino.
That reminds me, do either of you watch Rick and Morty by any chance?
No, I know what
Rick
it
and Morty
is.
It's a funny show, and it's like a almost like a rated R version of like Back to the Future type of thing. And the Rick is the grandfather, and he's always making these references, and like the audience loves it. And then like his grandchildren, they'll laugh or whatever. And and it got to the point where like they purposely like to fuck with everybody, the audience, as well as the everybody who just like takes everything for granted and laugh. Like you'll laugh at references even if you don't know what it is because you're just so accustomed to knowing the thing. And like I think it was in the first or second episode of this season, Rick makes a reference and he's like, oh, this is just like so-and-so-and-so-and-so. And then like the grandkids laugh and he's like, yeah, you're laughing. Do you get it? No, you don't, because I made that up. You're laughing at a stupid reference that I made up.
Oh,
and he's
great.
Like calling the
that's
grandkids
awesome.
And the audience
that's
out
for really
this.
Fun. We had fun with it in Zombieland too, you know, we had Little Rock not know who Bill Murray was or who Gandhi was, you know, and it just drove Tallahassee crazy. There's just a little, the generational divide is too
hard. I'm trying
to
think
sometimes.
What other references didn't make got cut from Deadpool.
Oh, that in that scene?
No,
China?
No.
Oh, sorry.
In just all together, like Orlando Woolridge. We had an Orlando Woolridge joke, that old Laker power forward.
Yeah, I mean, just some of them were so obscure.
What else? I'm trying to think.
Oh, my gosh. Orlando Jones. We kept Orlando Bloom, Orlando Jones, Orlando Woolridge. This is why we stay up in bed staring at the ceiling until 4 a.m. You know, trying to figure out the funniest Orlando joke. I don't think any of those was that funny.
It's
actually,
O Canada.
Exactly. It became O Canada. But
there's a lot of at least in the trailer and there's like when you write, do you write the like DMX, I believe, is in the trailer. Is the
that
DMX
was in
song
the script.
Is that's in the script.
That was very
now,
specific.
So you guys are specific. You actually write the songs that
we
are playing
very
off
specific
in
and then,
like
and
the
then
scenes
the
and in the action
oftentimes,
scenes.
Oftentimes, you know, we'll choose our song and oftentimes won't, depending. Like we did that with Zombieland too, and sometimes the song makes it all the way through from the script. Sometimes it doesn't for various reasons.
Yeah. Now, are you both are you fans of hip hop that you included that, or you just included that because
just,
DMX
just love that song?
Such a good
yeah.
song. Such a good song. So good. We've sat in screenings and it's just
DMX,
like
I like
literally
DMX,
when
man.
that thing kicks in, you can literally
yes.
the
see
theater is
bobbing
just bobbing with it.
It's
just
such a good song.
You can feel the theater move, yeah. you know.
So DMX is like hip hop. I have, and I just recently watched. It's award season right now, and I watched Straight Outta Compton. I don't know if you guys have seen this movie.
Mm-hmm. Not yet.
But it's pretty good. And in that movie, they kind of gave a fact that was interesting to me. But N.W.A. it was released. It was on Ruthless Records, but it was released by a company called Priority Records, which they got their funding and their money because they primarily released like compilation records, which included the California Raisins. And because the California Raisins did so well, just as like a novelty record, this record company got all this money that they could then use to
wow.
release N.W.A.
Wow.
And so they released N.W.A. in 1987, and that's when they accumulated the N.W.A. and all of those. And as they went on, they're primarily a hip-hop label, but I was looking on their Wikipedia and to just see some of these groups of that they also released. In 1990, they had Gwar.
Oh my God.
And the Goo Goo Dolls.
They were like, Gwar was like heavy metal.
Yeah. And they wore like, they'd wear like platform shoes. It was like if you took Kiss
yeah.
and added like cosplay.
Mm.
I mean, Kiss is already cosplay, but if you right. added like fake Vikings, they're like these demon Vikings.
Yeah,
and
I
they
think
like,
Beavis and Butthead were into Gwar,
yeah.
as I recall.
And they would have like these giant dinosaurs and like these like inflatable like dick guitars and things like that. And they would just this spectacle. They also had the Goo Goo Dolls. In 1993, they released Carole King and Sam Kinison. Then in 1994, this hip hop label released Foreigner and Pauly Shore.
Wow! So a lot of people under the
yeah.
umbrella.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So you write the hip hop in there. Now in Zombieland, there's a lot of visual effects and like After Effects with like what's the word I'm looking for with
the
type
rules,
with
yeah.
type and graphics. The rules and the graphics. Yes. There's
also
a word for like typesetting or whatever that you wrote that on the script. You wrote,
yes.
this comes across like
exactly.
this on the parking lot and all that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's almost like you're directing the movie in the script. Like if you're that into post writing in the script, that's fascinating to me.
Yeah. I mean, we try to direct on the page, and then sometimes the directors will keep it and sometimes they won't, but we like to create a very visual experience for the reader. I mean, make them imagine the images and, so we try to direct on the page as best we can without getting heavy-handed with too many camera angles and things like that because people get tired of that. But
you wrote like it's a, then it flashes then this drops.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, totally.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great writing, obviously. I mean, I really dig it. I think it's a I remember and my brother's very very picky when it comes to movies and things like that. And he's very into like graphic design and all that. And that was, I just remember distinctively like me telling him to watch the movie. Then I remember it because he lives in Michigan, getting texts from him being like, holy shit, this is great. This is like, it's a new, because it was also prefacing like Scott Pilgrim, which also kind of had a lot of that visual effect.
Yeah, right.
Which is just a great, it's a whole nother medium of incorporating storytelling into a film.
Yeah,
and I think it's severely like I think it's lacking a little bit nowadays. Like I don't think there a lot of films really make use of just.
Yeah, I feel like it's got to feel organic though. I mean, because
yeah.
if it's in there just for bells and whistles,
yeah.
it doesn't. It's distracting. Whereas the rules, Columbus's rules, allowed us.
Yeah.
The ability to, mm-hmm. to throw, you know, graphics up on screen organically, I think, and it wasn't distracting. So.
They made nice use of it in Creed, of all movies, if you have.
Yeah,
if you've seen
Creed was great.
They have some cool on-screen graphics
yeah,
there.
Yeah, they
you
do.
Know, the fighters' records and
yes,
you know, their
yes,
names.
Yep.
And, you know,
yeah.
they're,
that's
they're,
really great, too.
I loved Creed.
Creed was great,
too. Yeah, I saw it last night. I
Did
loved
you?
It.
Yeah,
it was
so good.
Fun.
What other movies have you seen this that are coming up that you're that kind of really excited you?
Recently?
Yeah.
Well, Mad Max was my favorite movie
right?
of the year. Favorite
Holy
movie
cow.
Of the year.
Just the best.
Just brilliant.
Yeah. I love Spotlight was my favorite
Spotlight
movie
was great.
This year. Yeah, but we loved a lot of things recently.
Revenant.
Martian.
Was great.
Sicario was one of our favorites.
Hateful Eight. I loved Hateful Eight.
I still haven't great. Seen Hateful Eight.
Hateful Eight was good. I haven't seen Sicario.
Oh, you must.
Great movie. Mm-hmm. Spotlight was great. Hateful Eight. Revenant was great. What was another good one? Mad Max, obviously, was probably one of my favorites. Wow. I liked Star Wars.
So good.
Star Wars?
It was fun. Yeah, it was fun.
Absolutely.
But Mad Max definitely seemed more like...
It was revolutionary.
Revolutionary.
Yeah, it really was. I mean, we just sat there.
I mean, there's very little plot, and it's point A to point B, but it's still so revolutionary in the simplicity of it all.
God, it's just brilliant.
Like,
little touches, just details that you just think, my God.
Yes.
Like, just brilliant.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
It really was. I can't say enough about that movie. Imagination that goes into those. Like, how would you ever think of that? How would you ever think of putting a guitar player?
A guitar player on a truck that shoots fire.
The Doof Warrior.
That's hanging on bungee cords.
Yeah, I know. Oh God, I mean, it's so just awesome. It's so great.
Man, that's great.
We're just nerding out right now. We're just so excited.
That's one I watched, and I was both in awe and jealous of.
Oh, very jealous.
Thought, oh my God, the imagination.
The best ones always make you jealous.
Yeah. So we talked about adapting like a sequel. What's the taking something brand new like Cowboy Ninja Viking or Deadpool? Like, do you go back and you read, like, to break that story? You obviously have to read the origins, and, you know, you either read the comics or read the, you know, the Wikipedia short version of it or whatever. But then, like you mentioned, there's a pizza scene that you took straight from the comics. How, like, that's an interesting thing to me.
That was the exception in our case. Yeah, but
you just love that scene so much. You needed to include that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, oftentimes we'll familiarize ourselves if we're not already familiar with the comic. We'll familiarize ourselves
because there's
with
also
the comic.
Liberties you have to take in order to tell the story,
and then we have to fall in love with the comic once we read it. You know, we become fanboys or we don't engage. Yeah. I think, and both in Cowboy Ninja Viking's case. In Deadpool's case, we familiarized ourselves with the comics and just fell in love with them. And then what we generally do is we put down the comic. We brainstorm, you know, filter through all the issues, and then put them down and really kind of figure out what the voice is, what the tone is, you know, and what the story is, setting aside the comics.
You have to put them down at some point because you can't be a mimic.
You
have to come up with your own voice. You have to hear it in your head.
Yeah.
And you just have to say, look, every writer's put their spin on Deadpool. There have been a bunch. Everyone's done a great job. They've built this wonderful body of material. And now it's our turn to pick it up. And we got to – in some respects, we have to listen to all those voices. And then at some point, we have to shut them out and then come up with our own slight spin on it.
Yeah.
And this is the newest iteration, and there'll be people after us. You know, it's just we're all keepers of the flame, so to speak.
That's great. That's awesome. Deadpool, February 12th.
Yes.
Nationwide.
Thursday night screenings on the 11th.
Yeah, 7 p.m. on the 11th.
Yeah.
We'll be there.
7 p.m. Is that in, like, the major cities, or is that most cities? Or is that, like...
I don't know.
Is that, like, the, quotations, midnight in, like, my small town, Bay City, Michigan?
Not 7 o'clock
on the major cities.
Yes, I would say so.
And pretty soon the weekend's going to start on a Tuesday if Hollywood has its way.
That's like summer blockbuster movies are now in March.
True.
Yeah.
It's like bananas.
They keep backing it up, and I just think it's like so they can say that their weekend in quotes was even bigger but it doesn't really matter when it starts and when it ends. People are going to go see it.
I'm a fan of it.
Backing it up.
I like backing
We're
it up.
Also
Let's start
out of
it on
a holiday
Wednesday,
weekend, which always it's like over the weekend, and they're adding Monday the holiday, so that'll be a sly trick we try.
Yeah, that's great. Deadpool February 12th or 11th if you're in a major city that has it on at 7 o'clock. Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank you
so much.
I'm glad. A lot of fun.
Thank you for coming back. Very nice meeting you.
Pleasure.
And everybody go see this movie. It's great. Where can everybody find you on the internet? Are you guys on social media?
Yeah, I am on Twitter at Rhett Rees, just my name. Yeah.
And I am not.
Paul's a hermit.
He's a hermit. Of a hermit. Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah. Luke Skywalker on the island.
Right?
With the crazy.
What's he doing there?
Spoiler alert.
Hey, listen.
I mean, come on.
If you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, come on.
Come on. It's been out a month and a half. Like,
exactly.
A movie of that. Of that level, like you get like a 2 week,
yeah,
3 week,
yeah, because maybe not, maybe 2 or 3.
Because I was at Christmas parties and even like New Year's parties, and I'm like looking around, talking with people because I don't want to spoil it. But at that point, it's like, you know what? screw it. Yeah. Like, go see it.
It's your fault.
It's your fault.
Yeah. Though I do remember saying something about Star. I saw it opening night, and the next morning I was talking in a group of people, and I didn't say anything, but I just met, I like started talking about. And like they attacked me. Yeah, I almost got torn limb from limb. They were so mad about potential spoilers, I understand.
But even like knowing, if you know anything, if you're a fan of any sort, which is who we all hang out with and all that, you got to know that. Han Solo, like Harrison Ford's not going to do three movies.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Like, you had to know that was coming.
Once they broke his leg, you know, on set, like, he's like, I
have to mention this fact because I asked my 10-year-old daughter, Maymay.
What your fact was.
Oh, sorry. I wasn't sure if you knew how.
I have to mention it.
Yes, please.
Because she'll be so excited that I did. Penguins, which she was reading about today for her homework, used to fly.
Get out of town.
Whoa.
Yeah.
That's
awesome. Then they moved to Antarctica, and because there were no predators in Antarctica,
they didn't need to fly anymore.
They evolved into not flying anymore and swimming.
That's awesome. There's also, I was reading, there's a fact of the,
like
there's a few different variations. Like the penguins don't fly, but there's some penguins in super cold, but then there's some penguins in like that live in like warmer climates too,
really?
which is weird to me.
There's a 4 foot tall penguin out there.
Whoa.
Wow.
An emperor penguin.
I don't know what it's called.
Really,
I guess I've never been around penguins, but that seemed, I mean, four feet is a tall for a bird.
It's pretty big.
For a bird.
A bird that now doesn't fly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm.
Very. I'm glad we saved the best for last.
There's a 4 foot. Yeah. That's great.
We'll be back next
week
to talk about penguins. We have a whole
birds fascinate me too, but giant creatures like that are. I mean, 4 feet is that's
massive.
It's pretty scary.
It'd be terrifying.
The Revenant 2, Leo gets attacked by a penguin.
Sequel.
Thank you guys so much for joining us.
Thank
you guys so much for listening to this. Everybody, go see Deadpool. It's going to be amazing. It's going to be super funny. You can follow me on Twitter at my name is Razzle2. You can follow Dan, who's usually here also. Also at OsteoFerocious. Give us a like on Facebook. Today we learned with Razzle and Dan, and go on iTunes and give us a good rating and leave some comments and help us continue to climb those charts. And as always, thank you guys very much, and Audi 5000.
Audi 5000. Thanks, Razzle.
Thanks.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.